Peace, love, and light. We are back. Minds Like Minds podcast. I'm your host, RL Melpika. And today I'm super excited because we have a musician and an author on the podcast today that I'm really excited to conversate with. We have Wenzel McGowan with us. How are you doing, Wenzel?
Doing great. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, man. Really excited, man. There's so much to get to, man, but I'll start off. Kind of small a little bit. How's your day been going?
Good. I'm right now doing a fast.
Okay.
So it's been an interesting journey of, like, I tour a lot, and after touring, I like to kind of come home and fast.
Okay.
And I don't know how long I'm going to do this fast, but yeah, so far it's been 3 days. And
so are we talking like a water fast or just a dry fast?
Water fast. Okay. And I also do juice.
Okay. Beautiful.
But no solid food.
No solid food. Okay.
Yeah.
How long has it been so far?
It's the third day, and yesterday was pretty challenging.
Yeah.
And I was kind of like, it's interesting because fasting brings up emotions.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to observe the emotional system working because of a physical response. Like, there's nothing in my reality that would provoke sadness, but fasting is just kind of purging those emotions. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, okay, what am I sad about? And I'm like, actually nothing. And it's just a raw emotion that the fast brought out. So that's kind of interesting to work through that yesterday.
Yeah, man. Well, that's beautiful, man. Good luck, you know, throughout this fast, and detox yourself from whatever you need to detox. And yeah. The beautiful thing about a fast is you're always going to end up better than you were before afterwards.
Exactly. So. Last time I did it, I actually got COVID on the 10th day.
Really?
Yeah. I did 10-day fast, and on 10th day I got COVID.
That is interesting.
And then I was 10 days in bed. Because with COVID, so it was like, that's interesting because it was also right before I started my year of sobriety.
Okay.
So I had 10-day fast, 10-day COVID, and then I started, then it was January 1st of this year, and I started my year of sobriety. So it's kind of like, it almost felt an initiation of some sort.
Yeah. So how's the sobriety going?
Good. I mean, I never had like a serious problem with drugs,
right?
But I like to like have a glass of red wine or like sometimes even a bottle of red wine,
right?
And write. That's been like kind of like my vibe. Just like light a candle, drink some red wine, and write.
Yeah.
But it became like almost like a habit. Like,
gotcha.
I would just do it all the time, and so at some point I was like, you know what, this is. And then the next morning, I would just have a lot of coffee and then kind of just ride the ups and downs of alcohol and coffee. And I had this dream where I was like hunched over walking, drinking, and then drink a coffee and then running as fast as I can, then hunched over walking, drinking.
Okay.
And then like the spirit guide came to me and was like, what are you doing? And so it kind of was a thing like that came, I think, from my soul, where it's like, I need to try quitting those things and see how I can have the same effects.
Oh yeah. I mean, there's no coincidences, yeah. Right? You know, you get a message like that, you have to follow it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And shit, I'm glad that happened for you, man. Good luck with that too. That's big.
Thank you.
Cause I mean, especially, I mean, if you look at not just alcohol and like, criminalized drugs, but mm-hmm. just even over-the-counter drugs, even caffeine, you know, even shitty food, you know what I mean? It's important to understand that, you know, what that does to your body, and it affects mm-hmm. every aspect of your life. And when you get a message like that, you have to take action.
Yeah. You know, it actually took me a long time to kind of do this. Like, I've tried a year of sobriety in 2020.
Right.
Then all my tours got canceled. You know, we had like spent $30,000 on hotels and flights, and I was like, what am I doing with my life? My marriage fell apart, and I was kind of like this, and I couldn't just do the year of sobriety. So I started drinking again, in March.
Gotcha.
And One thing I realized on this journey of trying to shake these habits, because I've been trying to shake habits for a long time,
right,
is how important is the acceptance of the habits.
Yes.
Because once you bring in guilt, you actually amplify your habit. Yeah. Once you're guilt tripping yourself, like I'm not good enough, I can't do this. I found that the most helpful thing was actually to accept myself exactly how I was.
Right.
And like, that was really what allowed me to do this year of sobriety. Like last November, I was doing Qigong and I was looking in the mirror and I was kind of doing the spiritual breathing exercises. And I was like having a very honest moment of reflection. I was like, okay, I've been trying to shake these habits for years.
Right.
And I have failed. And I was like, maybe I can't. And I was like, and that's okay. Like, I'm accept myself as this person that's been trying to do this and has failed. And I'm not going to guilt trip myself about that.
Right.
And I'm going to accept that that is exactly where I'm at right now.
Yep.
And that this moment of complete acceptance that kind of then helped me. From there, I genuinely lost desire to keep doing those things.
Wow.
And from this moment of acceptance.
One of the big things you said there was right now. You know what I mean? There's a lot of times like we have to realize that sometimes it isn't our timing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And to understand that and really be able to acknowledge that is a huge, huge step forward. So just big ups to you on all that stuff, because especially, you know, obviously you have a passion for music. I have a passion for music as well. I'm not I don't play any instruments, but I used to do hip hop music. About 5-6 years ago, and just the passion and love for it. And to know all that comes along with it, especially temptation, you know, with you touring and stuff like that, I can only imagine what you're around, the other bands you're around, the other people, women, men, whatever, all those things. How do you deal with that? Do you understand your triggers and kind of know what you need to do to kind of navigate through that, through all that craziness?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I've been touring for almost 12 years.
Oh, wow.
And literally there were years where I spent more time sleeping in hotels than sleeping at home.
Oh, wow.
And I think I've also lived through that. I've like literally let loose and like done it all. Like I've literally, you know, done drugs, hooked up with random people to the point where I was like, okay, I'm over it.
Yeah.
And then I had a spiritual awakening experience in 2013, which rearranged my priorities. And in that experience, I kind of had an encounter with some sort of dimension of consciousness beyond the physical that was filled with value, with almost moral value, but not moral in the terms of judgment, but moral in terms of virtue, like moral in terms of like consciousness having reached a certain level of benevolence and intelligence that it can exist and radiate a type of pure divine love that I had never felt before. And when I had this encounter, it was so real and so overwhelming that I was obsessed with this multidimensional love. I couldn't stop thinking about it. And I was like, what is it? Like, are there other people that have had this experience?
Right.
And what does it mean? Like, how do I do it? I had this desire to become closer to it, to like almost like a heartbreak, like having had a relationship with someone you really loved and suddenly you were severed again. So I had this, after this meditation retreat, this desire to basically become that love. And and so that became my top priority in 2013. Wow. And everything else was second, like, you know. And of course I still was, you know, a 24-year-old, you know, horny touring musician, and, you know, living through some ups and downs and dramas, you know, like, I feel like having an encounter with that kind of love doesn't mean that you become it right away. I think that's a life work or maybe multiple lives.
Mm-hmm.
So So yeah, I just changed my perspective of where I'm going.
Yeah. And it just, yeah. I mean, I can only imagine, I mean, an experience like that, not everybody has those types of experiences, you know, they're there, but they're there for specific individuals. You know what I mean? And for you to go through that at that young of an age, you know what I'm saying? Most people don't know what to do with that. You know what I mean? And they may chalk it up to something else or try to explain it, you know, in a rational way, in a physical type of way, but it's not meant to be explained that way. It's meant to be felt by the receiver. And that kind of gives them, you know, like you said, different perspective, clarity, you know, just kind of an alternative philosophy on what this thing called life's all about. Now let me ask you, when you had this experience, I'm sure you have a circle, people around you, you know, bandmates, you know, girlfriends, you know, family, whatever the case. When you told them about this experience, what was some of the feedback you got?
They were all worried or angry at me.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Like, because I changed me so drastically that some people were like, who are you? Oh. Like, this is not like how I'm used to dealing with you. And also I feel like that I was dealing with like some archetypal patterns that I hadn't overcome yet that were making it more difficult for me to integrate the experience. And that is, I think, the Christian archetype of proselytizing. And I think that a lot of people that have an encounter with God want to save others.
Right.
And then want to like tell others what the way is. And that's a huge turnoff for people. And it is actually born out of arrogance. And it's also born out of the inability to understand that embodying that love and living it is much more of a contribution than explaining it or trying to convince others that it exists.
Wow, that's deep.
And so I was just butting heads a lot because I hadn't learned that lesson. And I was butting heads a lot. And then also I started writing my books. And in the process of writing my second book, The Sequence of Latent Truth, I was traveling through Alabama to meet up with a scientist from NASA called Tom Campbell. He was working for the Ares One missile defense program in NASA, but at the same time, he also had launched out-of-body experience research programs and was studying the phenomena of consciousness. And he's done this decades. Like, he's in his 70s now, and he started doing this when he was, I think, in his 20s, the consciousness research. And it was a very private thing for him in the beginning. And he kind of became like a sort of a mentor because like he claims to be living in multiple realities at the same time. Like he says, like when he sees people, he's, you know, he basically has access to sees their past lives. And,
oh, wow.
And like, see, you know, he like said he knew his grandkids before they incarnated because he met them as spirits.
Wow.
He says like he leaves his body and goes travels in astral planes and interacts and interacts with, you know, beings that don't have a physical form. And I mean, I'm not no one to judge how much of that is true or not. However, he has such a deep warmth and wisdom about it that it's like very hard not to kind of believe him, I guess. And when he saw me and I like genuinely asked him for advice and, you know, that is the advice he gave me. He was like, even if you do have some insights about other people's lives and the patterns in which they are stuck, don't share it with them because that is their reality to immerse from within.
Yeah.
Unless they ask you.
Yep.
Yeah. And that was a thing I think that I really hadn't understood. I thought I'm helping people by pointing out ways in which they're stuck.
Right.
But that is actually extreme arrogance because first of all, the soul, the way the soul evolves, who knows what the plan is? Like, your soul and your perspective is your soul and your perspective. Someone else's soul and their perspective is a process completely foreign, or it's completely unique. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I once talked to a psychic just to talk about this. I don't know if it's true or not, but I think it gives an interesting perspective. He was doing a past life reading on my past lives. And he said that I wanted to develop a drive within me. And I did that by incarnating as two brothers in Egypt, who had both inherited the same size plot of land next to each other. And we made it our competition to grow more, who can grow more food in the same size plot.
Really?
And that was actually me battling against myself, trying to get a drive of achieving.
For sure.
And I mean, I don't know if that's true or not, but it's just like a kind of a far out idea. And like, so imagine now going to one of those brothers and being like, hey, you guys are so competitive. What are you doing? You know, like maybe that's the whole purpose.
Yeah.
You know, maybe that is actually what they're trying to achieve.
For sure.
Is to live out that dynamic.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, I mean, I, you know, based on just talking to you a little bit, I, you know, you're obviously very in tuned with the metaphysical possibilities out there. And, you know, I work with, you know, a past life regressionist. I work with a psychic medium with our streaming platform, AkashaFlix. So I'm right in the middle of all of it. And, you know, just based on my studies and my philosophies and whatnot, you know, I truly do believe that we choose the life we have before we are incarnate. And, you know, for whatever lessons that we need to learn throughout this lifetime to ultimately get to the point where we're going to, you know, ascend to the next level of consciousness, you know?
Right.
So I totally get that. I mean, I can totally see that. And things that happen in our life, you know, when people say that happened for a reason, that's what they're speaking of, because like, your ups, your downs, the hurdles, the roller coasters that we go through, like that is part of the lesson. That is part of learning. So we can, you know, grow and, you know, this earth plane, this is school. You know what I mean? This is school for
us. Earth school.
Exactly. So you talked about your book, which one, the sequence of latent truth that recently released, what, in May this year, right?
I re-released it in May.
Oh, re-release. Okay. And you have one before that, The End of Fear. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. So
End of Fear is a novel.
Oh, okay. So it's fiction.
Yeah. It's actually a novel based on my own awakening experience.
Okay.
Because my awakening experience was extremely volatile.
Okay.
Because it wasn't like, I think that you can save yourself a lot of drama if you awaken slowly. And by that I mean, you're integrating one idea at a time and you slowly open up to the higher dimensions. I'm just such a curious person. Like if I see a potential somewhere, I want to go all the way instantly, right away. And I think that doesn't mix well with awakening. So I just kind of pried open a door that just came in, blasting a beam of light that totally shattered my belief systems and reality concept of myself. And it literally blew my circuits to the point of like me losing my memory of who I was.
Oh, wow.
I was like, at one point, had no recollection of the life that I had lived.
Oh, my goodness.
I only knew I was an eternal soul. That's the only thing I knew. Wow.
Yeah. It's a good thing to walk away with, but I mean, there's probably some other things you wanted to know too.
Yeah, I mean, it was disorienting, because I was like, oh man, I have a life here then, and people are relying on me. I'm like, you know, running a band, and like, like there's people relying on me that I can function as a human, and here I am, have forgotten like my entire human identity, and so it was a little scary.
Yeah.
And volatile because of that.
Interesting. So how did, like, I'm always fascinated with authors, people that write books. I show immense appreciation for it, because like, all, you know, when you write a book, like that's something that's going to stand forever. Like, there's no one that could ever take that away from you. That written history, whether fiction or nonfiction, is going to, you know, is going to be there forever. You know, those copies are going, you know, as long as they're intact, you know, and even if they're digital, they're definitely going to be forever.
Right.
So, you know, I'm always appreciative of that, but I'm also curious of your process. Like, how did your process go? How long did it take you to write it? Was it difficult? You know, kind of give us some background on that.
For sure. It started with me just continuously hearing a voice during meditation saying, write a book. And I had no idea what to write about. I didn't want to write about my awakening experience. I was embarrassed by how crazy it was. And I just started writing with my at that moment, my reality. I was like, I'm on tour. This is what's happening. I'm playing a show here. Sure enough, I meet an editor like 2 or 3 weeks later that she went to Harvard and you know, that was her thing, editing books. And I was like, hey, I'm writing a book. And she's like, I would love to see what you're writing. And so I sent her my draft. And then she was like, you know, like, I'm going to be honest with you. Like, you're not a good writer at this moment, but I can sense that you have something to say. And I want to help you say that.
Oh, wow. And that's awesome.
And I want to be your writing coach.
Oh, wow.
And so I was like, okay. So then she would send me back a draft with highlighted all the things that she wanted me to explore in greater depth. And then that kind of brought me onto the path of writing about my awakening experience because she kept digging for it.
Yeah.
And then she was like, man, you're progressing like incredible. I feel like you must have help coming from somewhere else, from some other place. And she was like, now you're writing suddenly at the grad student level. And, you know, and I was obsessed. I was literally writing 6 hours a day. I couldn't stop, you know?
Damn.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was spending all my time.
You were writing. In the zone.
Yeah. I was. It almost became a problem with my band. Where like,
oh, I bet.
My bandmates were like, dude, we just feel like we're traveling with some obscure philosopher. it's like
I like that. That's good.
Yeah.
Man. Well, that's all. And look, for anybody out there listening, watching, or whatever the case may be, you know, like, take this as a lesson or whatever. Like, there are no coincidences. Like, it's not a coincidence he met an editor who happened to be from Harvard, a great editor who brought out the best in him. You know what I'm saying? That wasn't some, you know, crazy coincidence. That shit was meant to happen. Yeah. That's why he is where he is today. So that's a beautiful story, man.
Yeah, I owe her a lot. It's really crazy. Yeah.
Wow. That's cool, man. That's cool. Yeah, so you got two books. And I got to ask you about you made a board game, man. That is cool.
Yeah, man. Well, when I was writing my second book, I was writing about this far out hypothesis. I guess it's not that far out to you probably, but basically the idea that, you know, consciousness comes into physical form, interacts with the other consciousness units, and then forms relationships, and through those relationships grows until it remembers again that it's just consciousness. Mm. And so this cycle of consciousness dipping into identifications and to liberate itself.
Wow.
And you know, you find that also in like Buddhism, Hinduism. It's like the basis of many philosophies and religions and mystical traditions. So I was like, how funny would that be if that's a board game? Like, everyone tries to go to inner peace, which, you know, is the point in the board game when you become a non-physical player.
Right.
You give up your board piece and you play as consciousness without a piece anymore. But on the way there, there's all these spirals that you can fall into, which are the negative human emotions.
Mm.
You know, such as anger, anxiety, self-doubt, dissatisfaction, and so on. I got like 13 different spirals that you can fall into. And when you're into one of the spirals, then you have to basically breathe and talk about these emotions.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, so it's kind of, I wanted to create a little replica of the incarnation system.
That's awesome. Hey, man, that's some creative shit, dude. Like, for real. That's some creative shit. And I'm a big board game head, man. I love board games, man.
I gotta send you one.
Oh, man. That'd be amazing. that would be absolutely awesome. You alluded to it, you know, to religions, different traditions, things that... Do you have a religious background?
Actually, no. I was raised atheist.
Oh, wow. And, okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
So meeting all these kind of other intelligences was, to me, like, very startling, because I didn't believe there was such a thing.
Yeah.
I think if I was raised Christian, I probably would have had an easier time being like, okay, these are just angels.
Yeah.
Once I was in a hot spring, and I stayed there all night in the hot spring in the middle of nowhere in Northern California. First, a group of Christians came. They were like Christian students at this church. And I started talking to them about awakening experiences. And one of them is like, yeah, you know, I've had one encounter with angels. You know, they came as this buzzing light, just emanating pure love, mm-hmm. and surrounded me and touched me and it changed me forever. And I was like, wow, that's amazing. Then that group left, and a couple hours later a different group came. Like, now it's a bunch of hippies, and they're sitting with me in the hot tub in the hot spring. And so I started talking to them about awakening experiences. One of the girls is like, yeah, so my deepest experience was, like, I was lying in my bedroom and suddenly these aliens came into my room. They came as these, like, buzzing lights, just emanating love, and they touched me and it changed my life forever. And I was like, okay, I literally in one day meet two people that had almost identical experiences. One person calls them angels, right. The other person calls them aliens.
Yeah.
And so I feel like awakening experiences are kind of like that. Whatever framework of interpretation is closest to you, that's what you're going to grab onto, yep. and be like, that's what it was.
Yep. That's crazy.
Yeah. But I feel like the truth of it is really beyond our ability to comprehend.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, I mean, maybe angels, maybe aliens, but that's a thought. That's an idea. Mm-hmm. Like,
that's been conditioned into us. Like,
right.
Yeah.
The experience itself is something beyond thought and idea. It's like,
right. It's because, like, you know, us on the physical realm, like, we have to try to quantify everything. You know,
exactly.
We have to be able to, you know, almost scientifically make it match up in some specific way. You know, our minds can't grasp the idea. We can't even grasp the idea of, you know, something existing forever. Like, because we have to, you know, we live in
infinity
such a...
Infinity makes no sense.
No sense, right? Everything has to have a beginning and an end. And when we realize that everything is cyclical, that's just... Even though we can say it and talk about it, we've never experienced it. So it's hard for us to truly relate. So what about the misconceptions of being in, you know, growing up an atheist? Because there's a lot of, especially in high... religious places or with super religious people, like, there's so many, like, negative connotations and incorrect misconceptions of atheism.
Well, I don't know incorrect or correct, but my experience with atheism is that it is a type of religion because it is based on the assumption that God doesn't exist.
Right.
So, like, I feel like a more neutral standpoint would be agnostic. Isn't that the word? Like,
yes.
Agnostic,
yes,
meaning like
something. Yeah, go ahead.
And you don't know what it is. You will believe once you see it.
Right.
But atheism says, no, are we not believing in that? Because we are assuming that we can explain everything with the interaction of matter and laws that guide matter. So that is a pretty arrogant assumption, especially since we haven't been able to explain the phenomena we observe in quantum mechanics for over 100 years.
Yep.
And, you know, double-slit experiments and other quantum mechanic experiments are literally the most verified and peer-reviewed scientific experiments of history, yet there's not 50% of scientists that agree on one coherent theory. Mm. Like, it just doesn't make sense, because it's literally the edge of our reality. Quantum mechanics functions right where our intellect, our logic, and our linear thinking ends.
Yep.
And so beyond that is something else. And also, if you think about it, like, our reasoning has evolved in a universe. And thinking now that our universe, our reasoning can explain that universe, is kind of like taking an apple from a tree, taking out a seed and saying, like, I can explain this whole tree based on this seed. Maybe right. You can get some DNA out of it, but you can't get all the information why this tree responded to the wind in this way. And the tree is much more than the apple. And so I feel like in the same sense that we can't just take our reasoning and say we're gonna understand the universe.
Right.
And I think we can get to a limit of that. We can get this far, but there's things beyond it. And that's kind of where God starts. But, you know, maybe, I don't know, do you use the word God? Like, some people don't like that word because it's been so...
I'm a former Christian.
Yeah.
So obviously God has been conditioned into me, you know, embedded basically into my life, but I don't use it anymore. I usually refer to like the ultimate energy source, mm-hmm. you know, something along that. I mean, mm-hmm. everyone has different, you know, philosophies on what they think it is. You know, I personally right. believe that our collective consciousness all together, you know, is God per se.
Right.
Like, we are all God. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I feel like I'm just getting into using the word God.
Yeah,
because I'm kind of interested in the religious trauma that is associated with that word.
Yeah,
there really is. You know, it's like because I think originally the word was coined for something like that.
You know,
it was for like this super dimension, super beyond personal. What's the word here? Just like an expanded awareness that exists beyond our reality. Mm-hmm. And then it was so distilled down to like a judgmental man that will punish you, right?
And that's where fear came in and all right, kinds right. of the crazy shit. Yeah.
Right. And that was basically done because the church wanted control, you know, and you can control people if you make them afraid of punishment. And also if they want reward. So now prayer becomes, please spare me, give me this, give me that, don't punish me, forgive me, right? It's like, it's this, you're basically trying to manipulate God to favor you.
Yeah.
And I think that like the real stuff, the good prayer is like connecting to God mm-hmm. and feeling the presence of God in your life, in your body, in your heart, and realizing that you are one with it, and that you're born out of God, and that you are God, and that everyone is and everything is God, and everything is an expression of God. And so I kind of like using the word again, because I do feel that religious trauma and the resistance to the word.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm like, okay, what is that? Why is there trauma there? And then that brings me sort of to feeling into the pain that was caused through religion, the pain that was caused by wanting to abuse something so beautifully for personal power.
Yeah. Yeah. And everything you talked about, you know, just the kind of what powers have taken religion and made it to control people, cause that trauma, you know, because they just identify God with, like you said, the all powerful, the judger, the ultimate mm-hmm. judger of mankind. Right. And, you know, like people talk, what's one of the famous lines people use? I'm a God fearing man. Well, you know, what does that mean? I'm a God fearing man. Why should you be a God fearing man? You should be a God loving man. You know what I'm saying? That goes along with it, you know? And I love the fact that you bring this conversation up, because a lot of people don't bring it up from that perspective, for bringing it up, like, as, you know, feeling, you know, understanding the people's trauma about it, because we should, and, you know, we should be able to have a conversation about it without emotions getting involved. Yeah. have it, a conversation intellectually and share ideas without some people getting mad. But what's the saying? You know, you don't talk about politics and religion. Well, why not?
Right, right.
You know, exactly. I talk, you know, I'm going to talk about whatever I want to. That's how we grow as people, is talking about it from different viewpoints.
Exactly. And I think what happens with trauma is it splits. Trauma inevitably splits things, whether it's, you know, personal trauma or societal trauma. Like, personal trauma splits off parts within us that we're not able to process. Like, a nice definition for trauma is too much too soon. And like, for example, in childhood, when we get traumatized, we can't integrate this pain. So we push it away, and then that painful part starts operating apart from us. And that's why so many of us end up like looking for who are we, because there's all these fragmented psychic parts of us that are hurt and have different agendas of how to get the love that they think they deserve, which of course all parts of our psyche deserve love, but we are taught by conditional love to have these strategies of how to get love. And that's what happens when we get traumatized. We don't receive love in a healthy way anymore. That's why you find traumatized people looking for traumatized partners, having abusive relationships, and that perpetuates on and on and on. And I think the same happens on a societal level when we don't heal trauma. You know, you got the hyper fanatic Christians or hyper fanatic religious people, and then people that totally deny God and throw out the baby with the bathwater, the atheists. And, you know, so I kind of want to position myself in the middle and be like, you know, I totally understand why atheists are so against religion, because they're basically only looking at the abuse of religion, and because of that are throwing out the baby with the bathwater. While Christians are basically so afraid of God that they are just clinging to these scriptures and not realizing the essence of God. And I'm not speaking for all Christians.
Yeah,
I mean, I know a lot of Christians that are super close to God and are super open-minded and are living their original truth that Jesus was teaching.
Yep.
But when you're talking about religious fanatics getting angry at atheists and that kind of dynamic, right? Yeah, so I think that's just religious trauma. I mean, it makes sense, though. If you look what happened, like witches being burnt and, like, you know, all that stuff, like, that's madness that we actually lived through as humans. And there is, of course, trauma there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I did a workshop a couple months ago. And like I said, I'm not, neither one of us are here calling out Christians or Muslims or anybody, you know, anybody. Right. but I did a workshop on all the amount of people that have died in the name of Jesus, you know, just going through, you know, the timeline of terror, basically.
Right.
You know, that went, you know, from the Crusades to the Inquisition, to the genocide of indigenous people, to the Atlantic slave trade, to whatever, you know, just going down the line. And it was just eye-opening to a lot of people, because society, especially, you know, especially here in America, like, you know, they put out this narrative that, you know, all the other religions are the radical ones and not Christianity, right? And that's totally not the case. I mean, like I said, so many people have died in the name of Jesus, probably more in the name of Jesus than any other religion, to be honest. But that perspective, you know, needs to be put out there, because it's not to shame Christians. It's not to put them down. It's just to understand the true history of the world and why it is the way it is today is a lot because of religion, because religion is the ultimate form of conditioning. Like, you know, I mean, if you go back to the Hindus, which is a super old, you know, Hinduism is a super old religion, but that introduced the caste system, you know?
Right.
And the caste system is, you know, one of your first forms of prejudice against, you know, people of different social class and whatnot. But yeah, I mean, that's all. And it's okay to talk about those things, because at the end of the day, we're all learning and we're all growing, and it's not your fault if you didn't know that. That's cool. You know, just take it and roll with it. Take what you need and leave what you don't.
I think it's going back to healing trauma, like it's so important to remove judgment. Because when you have judgment, trauma can't be healed, because trauma can only be healed in truth. When trauma basically unfolds in truth, and it can only do that when it feels safe. And so when someone doesn't feel safe, then they're not going to listen to a new perspective, but they're going to build walls and defend them as hard as they can.
Yes.
And so I'm all about removing judgment from things and realizing, like, you know, we are all flawed humans, like struggling to make sense of this crazy reality.
Right. You know?
And I feel like everyone has different perspectives, different opinions, and like sharing them with each other. It's not about fighting who's right or wrong.
Right.
It's not about convincing others to that that's wrong, that's right. And it's more like, how can we find coherence together? And yeah, I don't really know where I'm going with this tangent.
It reminds me of one of my favorite quotes is, the highest form of intelligence is to observe without evaluation.
Mm, yeah.
I mean, think about that. You know what I'm saying? To be able to live your life and observe and be aware and not judge, not evaluate, not compare. You know what I'm saying?
It just made me think of a conversation I had at Burning Man. I met this woman at Burning Man and I was talking to her and she was like really high in like a big tech company. And she was like, you know, all the people that she worked with were these like older, rich white men. And we talked about, you know, how challenging that is for her, because they're not open to like views that challenge their beliefs. And, you know, they're willing to use power to just keep their views what they are. And she was telling me that she heard a similar quote, which was, listening isn't agreeing. And because usually whenever they would talk to her about social issues, she would get so triggered that she would get angry and couldn't talk to them anymore. And so she was like, okay, like I can listen to these people. I don't have to agree with them.
Right.
And so then she would just do that and just listen to them. And one day, they were at a bar and she was listening to this old white man just talking, and he was saying like how challenging it is, you know, for him to live now in a reality where a new movement has started with feminism and social equality is basically rising up against white domination, and he phrased it like saying like, me as a rich old white man, I now look bad. And then she said to him, oh man, that must feel so horrible, imagining feeling like that for 400 years. and he went silent.
Right, that's like a mic
drop. At that moment, he was like, oh my God. Like,
so true. So true.
Yeah.
And that's just perspective, you know. And when you listen to more people, like you said, listening is not agreeing. When you listen to more people from different parts of the world or different cultures or different religions, whatever the case may be, you know, that's just look at it as an opportunity to grow. Like I work with, you know, 8 or 9 different esoteric healers. Right. Mm-hmm. And we all have different philosophies. We all have some common stuff, but we all have different philosophies. And, you know, like if I wasn't able to listen and be, you know, impartial and give people their time of day, it would never work. But I learned so much from them, and I'm sure they learned some stuff from me. And look, talking to you today, we come from two different worlds. I'm learning so much from you. You know what I mean? And we have, you know, we have different backgrounds and whatnot. That's what it's all about. You know, there's so much to learn. There's so many different perspectives to take in. And that's how you become better, you know?
Yeah. But that's not easy to do if you don't feel safe and comfortable with yourself.
Fact. 100% fact. Stamp on that.
And yes. So like a lot of people, when they don't know about trauma, their 7-year-old child is screaming inside of the skull while they're busy watching football and drinking beers.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, make a whatever, that maybe is not the best analogy, but the point is that like some people don't know that trauma.
Truth.
Because they have just adopted, you know, a framework of what it means to be a man, for example,
right,
that they inherited from their father. And, you know, mans don't show feelings. Mans are strong. You know, mans don't cry. Men don't cry.
Toxic masculinity. You
know, exactly. So there's so much of this stuff that people then deep down feel very unsafe, but don't know how unsafe they are. But all they can do is defend their opinions and viewpoints to prevent themselves from feeling how unsafe they feel.
Right.
Because they're afraid of feeling that, because their father said you can't be weak and you can't show your feelings. So, you know, so then we see that like all these like really opinionated people just like pushing their opinions with violence just in order for them not to have to address their trauma.
Yeah, that's that's heavy. And that's so true. That's so true. I mean, you to get to that point where you can listen to people, you have to be very comfortable in your own skin. And
we live in
a society where that's just not promoted. Just the way society's set up, systems and social media and what you see on TV, what the objectification of women looks like, what the objectification of men, you know, who show femininity, who show emotion, who show anything that is against the patriarchy of what a man should be. You know, all these things are shunned. Exactly. Mental health, you know, mental health in the urban culture, like, is just looked at as weakness, you know, so people don't go get help or address their issues, address their traumas because they're looked at as weak.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it all just culminates into a, you know, a stew of, you know, a bunch of hurt people.
And hurt, a stew of hurt people.
Yeah. And hurt people hurt people, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of the old adage.
hurt people. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's interesting because it's kind of like, it's almost like we're packaged in the sense that there's these psychic programs that keep a lid on us. And, you know, those are exactly what we just talked about, like not being afraid of being weak, showing your feelings, being vulnerable. Man, it's still hard for me, man, if I'm not feeling well, to be like, I'm not feeling well. And this is what I'm feeling. Like, I have such a hard time doing that to another person.
Right.
Even if it's my partner or loved one, I feel like I need to go away alone, deal with my feelings, and then enter again the relationship. It's very hard for me to be like, I'm just right now in psychic chaos. And like, here, you can look at this chaos with me if you want. But I'm getting better at that, of just allowing someone in and like dealing with that uncomfortable emotioning of peeling these psychic layers away that society had imprinted on me, that men need to be strong and can't show their feelings.
Yeah. I mean, I'll be honest, I deal with that too.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard for me to tell somebody that, you know, I just can't do it today. I need a day to myself, you know. Mm-hmm. Usually I'll just disappear. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And if it's a loved one like my wife or something like that, sometimes I just won't talk about it and I'll suppress it, which I know is unhealthy. You know what I mean? But I'm working on it and getting better as well. But I think we all have things like that. Need to address that shadow work per se.
I mean, every single person, even the ones that claim they don't have it, you know, that those are the most dangerous people, actually.
You got to acknowledge that shit first.
Wow.
Well, let me ask you this, man, before we start wrapping up, I wanted to get into your music a little bit. Moon Hooch.
Okay.
You guys are touring right now, right?
Always touring, yeah. Music's going well. We're touring a lot. Putting out a new album. It's going to be a cover album. And it's our first cover album. All our other music was originals.
Nice.
But we kind of wanted to see, like, what is it like when we play, like, pop songs with two saxophones.
Yeah, yeah.
And kind of go into that world a little bit. I'm writing also a new book.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's pretty much about what we talked about, like conceptualizing God without conceptualizing God, like without like having the, without trying to put God into a fully defined box.
Right.
Understanding that there's millions of different ways of talking about God, and all of them are approximations.
Yep.
And so basically wanting to just create a felt relationship opposed to an all-encompassing framework.
Gotcha.
And yeah, man.
Nice. What about the traffic cone saxophone? What's the story behind that?
Oh yeah. Well, you know, in 2012, I stuck a traffic cone on my saxophone and started playing bass because it makes the saxophone lower.
Yeah.
And over the years, it just became like a total sensation, like millions of views our videos with traffic cones, and now saxophone players all around the world are imitating the traffic cone saxophone, and it's becoming like probably the biggest contribution I've made to this planet, although the most random and insignificant. But it's, yeah.
That's creative, though, man. That's cool.
Changed the world forever with the track.
Right. Hey, you're leaving a legacy, so. Man, right? That's what's up, dude. Awesome, man.
That's funny, yeah.
Cool, man. Plug everything, man. Plug your website, your where they can find your books, the board game, all that good stuff. Social media, yeah. Whatever.
So my website is wenzelmcgown.org. wenzelmcgown.org. .com, unfortunately, no longer available. A porn site is now squatting that domain. And you can find my music from there too, or Spotify. And my band is called Moonhooch, moonhooch.com. You can also find that.
Nice. You guys are, I'm in Dallas. You guys are coming to Dallas in January, man. So I might have to hit you up. You know,
dude. If you need tickets, yeah, let me know.
That's awesome, dude. Okay, cool, yeah, man.
Yeah, shoot me a text day of the show and I'll give you as many tickets as you want.
Oh, I appreciate that, man. Thank you. Yeah, thank you, man. Sure. Look, this has been a fantastic conversation, man. Just thank you for coming on our show. You just shared a lot of wisdom, a lot of incredible experiences. And everybody out there, check out his website, check out his music, buy his books, and check out that board game, because that board game seems really, really cool. All right, thank you guys for watching on Twitch. Remember, we're here every Wednesday. Make sure you follow the channel so you can get notifications when we go live.